This is Genesis?
This is. We have
Genesis
a new
is shrinking.
Closer.
Depends on the month. Sometimes we have big parties. You know where the where
sure.
the tell your parents how that terms.
I have
the thank you for all that nasty crisscrossing. It's a that as opposed to are you ready? I'm so glad that all of you could come. It's such a beautiful day outside, nice and sunny. Hopefully we're heading towards, I know we're currently actually in spring, but hopefully we're heading towards more spring weather. So I'm so pleased that all of you are here. Welcome to Genesis Forum March. I wanted to remind you of two things before we begin. One is our Genesis Forum West, which we have two more sessions of. The flyer is over there. I can bring one to your table if you want. And it's on a totally different topic, but we've got two sessions left. It's at Temple Emmanuel in Newton. So if you like Newton or you live in Newton and you'd like to do some more learning, the next one is tomorrow, same time as this, at 12 o'clock, Temple Emmanuel. And then next week on Thursday is the last one. So if you want to come, if you have friends, please join us. It's going to be really interesting. The topic is civil discourse through a Jewish lens. So again, it's been the last two have been really fascinating, and I imagine the next two, our very own Dr. Rabbi Benji Samuels is tomorrow. So that again, I know he's a fan favorite. So if you want more information about that, the flyer is over here. And also, one other opportunity that's coming up is next week we have our community-wide book read. That's called Read On. You might have gotten an email or heard about it. So it's on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, at the Back Bay Event Center. The book that we read is Eternal Life by Dara Horn. We just got off the phone with Dara Horn. She's really excited to come and be here and talk and answer questions. So hopefully you will join us for that. Again, flyer is on your table. Please come join us. It's going to be really interesting. It was a really interesting book. Tell your friends, bring them. But for now, we are going to start with the learning today. And it is a great honor and pleasure to welcome Nancy Smith, who is a board-certified Jewish chaplain, licensed independent clinical social worker. She has many letters that follow her name. Currently works as a Jewish chaplain in the Department of Pastoral Care and Education at Beth Israel Deaconess. And is going to talk to us today about some really interesting topics that we sort of haven't heard from the more health care-centered ideology in our big topic of health and wellness. So I'm really interested to hear what she's going to present to us today. So welcome.
Okay, so the I see there isn't a microphone, so I just want to make sure, can people hear me? I'm not sure, but
see if we can make that happen.
Oh, okay. Okay, while that's getting set up, I would also just suggest that if anyone, if you're at a table by yourself, and if you don't mind moving over, because we'll be doing a couple of things that will involve needing to talk with someone next to you. So you can either move over now or when we get to that, but I would just recommend to be at a table with at least one other person. I'm fine. If people can hear me, I'm.
Okay. Can we hear?
Yeah.
Well,
is it working?
Oh. Okay. Bring you closer.
Okay, is that, can people hear me?
No, it's not on.
No, it's not on. Sorry.
Just try try again. Talk right into it.
Speak close to the mic.
Okay, can people hear me now?
It's on. It's just not very loud.
Be closer.
We'll work on it.
Okay, I'll speak loudly. Mrs. G is an elderly woman in her late 80s who has frequent admissions to the hospital due to congestive heart failure. Some admissions occur as emergencies with a brief stay in the intensive care unit. I initially met Mrs. G in a rounding visit in which I simply introduced myself to her and described my role. We have now had several visits. Okay. We have now had several visits over many years. On a recent visit with her, our conversation focused on her living situation in an assisted living facility where she moved after the loss of her spouse. Mrs. G delighted in describing to me that in spite of the facility not being kosher, she has found a way to observe what has been a way of life for her for 89 years. Her description included her recipes for cottage cheese with vegetables, making mandelbread in her toaster oven, which, by the way, her 86-year-old brother snuck into the assisted living facility, and how she manages the comments from others who cannot understand her steadfastness in maintaining this observance. At the close of the visit, Mrs. G turned to me and said, "When you spend time with me and we visit together, I know that God is near." So I'd just like to say that I'm really honored to be here as part of the Genesis Forum in memory of Rabbi Chiel. And I was remembering that one of the last times that I saw Rabbi Chiel was when he was speaking about his book called The Healing Power of Psalms. He was someone who also was very interested in the topic of healing and wellness. Since a key component of visiting is attempting to be fully attentive and present, I'd like us to begin by engaging with each other for a couple of minutes. So first, what I'd like you to do, and this is where you need to have one other person, hopefully, at your table, is I'd like you to turn to the person next to you, or if you want to do it as a whole table, and I'd like you to take just a couple of minutes and to do something that one of my teachers describes as parking something. Basically, you came here today, and I would imagine that many of you have things on your mind. So I'd like you to think about one thing that may be taking your attention away from being fully here and park it. And you can share that with each other. So let's just take a couple of minutes to do that.
Thank you.
What?
What happens to the light?
Just pick a seat at a table.
Thank you.
Oh, and take one of those handouts. And let's just take another minute or so. Let's begin to wrap this up. Okay, has everyone had an opportunity to park something? It means you've parked something. I'm sure many of you have several things that you might need to park, but the goal was to just come up with one thing. So hopefully we've all been able to do that. And next, as another way of drawing our attention and being together, I hope that you'll join me in a nigun to which we will add words. If you turn to, I think it's the third page, page two, in your booklet, we are going to be singing the words, the transliterated words on the left side of the page. If we think about Bikur Cholim, visiting the sick, as an act of loving kindness in which the divine presence is manifested, then we can think of these words as a means of that expression. So I will start by humming the tune. Feel free to join in with me if you're comfortable, and then we will add the words and sing it through a few times. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Yai, dai, dai. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Yai, dai, dai. Yai, dai, 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 dai. Ahava virachamim chesed v'shalom. I'd like to begin by offering a few words about healing, being a healer, and well-being, two key concepts to consider when we think about visiting the sick. So first, a quote by Dr. Naomi Remen, and this is what she says. Recognizing and reclaiming the capacity that we all have to heal each other, the enormous power in the simplest of human relationships, the strength of touch, the blessing of forgiveness, the grace of someone else taking you just as you are and finding in you an unsuspected goodness. For the healing of suffering is compassion, not expertise. And then Rabbi Alison Kestenbaum, who makes a distinction between well-being and the state of being not well. What she describes is that well-being has a unique meaning for each person, and it is important to understand this in the context of that individual's concept of herself. It is only with this understanding that our efforts at restoring a sense of well-being can be directed in a meaningful way. Just as the title of this series, Renewal of Body and Spirit, I think of such healing as deriving from the broader concept of wholeness. In Hebrew, we may say shlemut. So essentially, recognizing the peace that may come when one feels whole. Many patients express this yearning. And I would just note parenthetically that our last two parshiot that we read in Shul talked about two different kinds of sacrifices, the shlamav and the shlamim, the peace or well-being sacrifices, which people brought following an illness or following being saved from a close encounter. But now I'd just like to give an illustration of what I mean in talking about well-being versus being not well. Mrs. L is a married woman in her early 50s who has lived with cardiac issues and heart anomalies for many years. These issues have interrupted her work life and her leisure activities, and I met her in the hospital the day after she had a pacemaker inserted. I have introduced myself and asked her if she would like a visit. Initially, she is focused on what she imagines will be the nature of her recovery and the resumption of her activities. But as she continues to elaborate, she becomes tearful, and she expresses the ambivalence that she is feeling. On the one hand, she is grateful that the pacemaker may make a difference in her capacity to lead a life characterized by fewer interruptions, a life in which she can be more fully the person that she envisions herself to be. On the other hand, looking down at the area under her skin where the pacemaker now resides, she describes feeling like this device does not belong in her body. As she says to me, "I don't feel old enough for this." Although the pacemaker will very likely restore her to a state of being well, that vision is not consistent with her image of herself. And thus, the sense of wholeness that she wishes does not feel attainable for her. We will now look, and you can turn in your packet to the page that says Healing of Body, Healing of Spirit. We will look at the biblical sources and injunctions that are the underpinnings for this mitzvah. By observing this mitzvah, you are also fulfilling two other mitzvot, loving your neighbor as yourself and walking in God's ways. So at the top of the page, if I could have a volunteer to read in English and perhaps someone to volunteer to read in Hebrew. But we will be specifically focusing on the first sentence. Would someone like to read in English? A volunteer? Okay, thank you.
And the Lord appeared unto him in the terebinth of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground.
Okay, and would someone, just so we can hear the Hebrew, would someone like to volunteer?
Vayera elav Adonai v'Adonai namrei v'hu yishel petach ha'ohel k'chom hayom v'aysa ina v'ayar v'hinei shosha anashim v'itavim alav v'ayar v'ayar v'itavim v'esach ha'ohel v'ayishtachavu.
Okay, so I'm wondering if anyone has any thoughts about the first sentence, anything that you notice. And I would just say there's not a right or wrong answer to this question. This is an opportunity for us to imagine what's going on.
But I don't know what God Adonai has to do with the visitors. It doesn't seem to be a connection, actually.
Okay, I will explain that in a moment, but do you have any thoughts about what that first sentence might be about? Anyone? Okay, well, let me begin by saying that the rabbis don't hypothesize, but they understand this appearance of God to Avraham to have occurred on the third day following his circumcision. And what the rabbis note is God's humility, God's focusing on the sick person, that being Avraham, and the apparent lack of requirement for words to be spoken. So this idea is elaborated on in the Midrash Tanhuma, and I'll quote that. When God was revealed to Avraham, the Holy Blessed One stood, and Avraham sat, as it says, and he was sitting in the doorway. And now an interpretation. It is the custom of the world that when a student is sick and the teacher goes to visit, students go first and say, there is a delegation of the teacher to the house of the patient, meaning that the teacher wishes to visit the student. Not so the Holy Blessed One. When Avraham was circumcised and was in pain, God told the messenger to go and visit. So that's an answer to your question for the second part. But before they arrived, God came in first, as the Torah says, quote, and God appeared to him. Is there no greater humble one than that? And then we have the 12th century commentator Ibn Ezra, who comments on Psalm 41 as a further way of elaborating on this one sentence. So I will read what he says. So first from the Psalm. Happy is the one, this is not in your handout. Happy is the one who is thoughtful of the wretched. In bad times, may the Lord keep him from harm. May the Lord guard him and preserve him, and may he be happy throughout the land. The Lord will sustain him on his sickbed. You shall wholly transform his bed of suffering. So Ibn Ezra uses this example to demonstrate that qualities of empathy, sensitivity, and understanding are all important for healing. In looking at the psalm, he focuses on one particular word, which could conventionally mean see or watch over. But he suggests an interpretation of, quote, understanding with one's heart. So suggesting that it is speaking to the heart and getting to the heart of the matter and of the person. Rabbi Amy Eilberg also talks about this kind of a dialogue. When one is, quote, hearing the spaces between the spoken words, extending a sense of hospitality, caring, and safety, so that truths often left unspoken can find expression. It is this kind of seeing and hearing that we strive for in a visit. So I'd like to share a vignette of a story that's told about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Many of you may recognize that name. She was really seen as a pioneer in the area of grief and loss in talking about the stages, and there's been a lot of development about that since that time. But I think this story illustrates that issue of what it is to speak to the heart of a person. So it is told that she had been working at the time with hospice patients, and she returned to the hospital one evening to see a patient that she was working with. This was a man who was dying of cancer. She stopped short of entering the room because she noticed that he was speaking to someone. She couldn't see who that person was. When she eavesdropped, she heard the man pouring out his deepest thoughts and feelings, and she was stunned. The patient was doing what she had for weeks unsuccessfully tried to get him to do. And we can talk about that idea a bit later, that she had an agenda. At any rate, she waited at the door to speak to this amazing facilitator or counselor and learn his or her techniques. After a while, and much to her amazement, out stepped the cleaning person. Kubler-Ross took him aside and asked how he got that man to talk so freely. The cleaning person responded simply, "Honey, I didn't do a thing. I guess he just knew I was willing to listen. And when he started to talk, I just sat there. I held his hand and I listened to him. The good Lord did all the rest." So I'd now like us to consider, how is it determined that the injunction for us to visit the sick, the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, is derived from God's action, which we just read about, God's visiting of Abraham? And how are we to understand the strength and the authority of such an injunction? It is helpful to consider the importance of God's actions insofar as these inform the behavior of human beings. So if we look again at the sheet that we just had, healing of body and spirit, and the three passages that continue onto the page. And if I could have volunteers again to read in English, maybe three different people to read each of the sections. Anyone? Would like to volunteer? Thank you.
We are told early on in Genesis that we are created in God's image. Genesis 1:16. B'tzalmo, B'tzalem Elohim, in his likeness and the image of God. And then in Genesis 5:1, B'dmut Elohim, in his image.
Okay. So this first passage emphasizing the idea that we are created in God's image. And I think with one implication of that being that as we will see various attributes of God that are demonstrated during a visit, that we can imagine we would have those same attributes and that same obligation. Okay, would someone like to read the next two, actually, because they go together? Okay, so you see that the second two passages talk about walking after him, walking in God's ways. And this is further supported by Reb Elazar Azikuri in Sefer Haredim, who suggests that this idea of the way refers to visiting the sick. And as was just explained in the Talmud, we see this as a way of emulating God's chesed. Just as God visited the sick, so you too should visit the sick. I would also like to note that there are additional biblical roots that we will not look at right now, but just to give a mention of them. In Deuteronomy 22:2, there is a discussion of finding a relative's lost animal and the obligation of returning it. And when this is interpreted, it's come to be understood as returning a person sick, a person who is ill, returning their health to them. And that is used as one example. In Leviticus 12:25, there is a section about redeeming a kinsman in dire straits, where redemption is seen as an obligation. Again, another instance that comes to be interpreted as our obligation to help in the redemption of someone's health and well-being. And then in Prophets, in Micah 6:8, there are three principles that are noted, and these are given as examples of ways that we can imitate God's chesed. So I'd now like to turn from the biblical to think about the ongoing interpretation of the rabbis and the development of this mitzvah through them. If you turn the page in your handout, if someone would first read the part that begins with Rabin. Okay? Okay, so again, a text that supports and strongly supports the idea that in visiting the sick, God's presence is manifested, and that this is something that God does, and this us being created in God's image and needing to be exemplars, really, of God's attributes, that we are obligated to do the same. So the next three pieces, what I'd like us to do is around your tables to take turns and read those three passages aloud. I'd like you to concentrate on the first two stories particularly, and then we'll come together and I would just like to get your input as to how you understand these stories, which speak to the idea of healing. So let's just take a couple of moments. And if someone can volunteer at each table and read each of them aloud, and then you can briefly talk together about your understanding of what this means.
Why cannot all the scripture read seven? Why Christians cannot read seven?
but even though I say, because I feel I know now what health is.
So let's just take a couple more minutes to finish discussing, and then we'll come back together.
Thank you. go, you see hell, you know, I mean, you see what was bad, so then you can rise above it and have a good time.
Anyway, in any case, both patients talk about it. They don't welcome the group payment. Is there an optimistic one or a pessimistic one? They're beyond that. They don't welcome
the group payment.
Okay, so maybe we're ready to come back together?
Yes.
Okay. So since I'm aware that there is probably a lot of wisdom in this room, in addition to all the wisdom that I'm sharing of the rabbis, I thought if we could have maybe one representative from each table who might like to summarize or talk about some of what the members of your table came up with in terms of your understanding of these passages. Should we start here? and speak loudly so everyone can hear you.
Well, we looked at the plain meaning of what was going on and the elusive third story, which I guess seemed to indicate if the light was coming from the patient, that the patient in some way was now the source of healing, not the healer who could grab his hand and raise them. Although I think we were curious what follows. Mm-hmm. Did he actually try and grab his hand and raise him being equivalent to healing him? We talked about what does it mean, neither they nor their reward. On an optimistic point of view, reward could mean you'll be a better person after your illness. You'll have learned something, which you hear all the time. And the pessimistic point of view, which the patient still might be a blessing, is death. So, but the patient in both cases really doesn't care about either one, the optimistic or the pessimistic one. And it's kind of beyond those rewards, if you want to call them that. Does that pretty much sum it up, gentlemen? Yeah. Okay.
Okay, maybe from the next table, someone would like to summarize for us? Or if there's anything you'd like to add to the...
I mean, we kind of talked about the same thing about the phrase, neither they nor their reward, and we also talked about whether death was the reward or whether or not it might have been almost sarcastic, the reply, neither they nor their reward. Maybe it's, you know, you are now not walking the way you used to. It's still not good, but this is the reward I got from my illness or being incontinent or something along those lines, almost a sarcastic reply. And we also, in story three, in story two, we kind of thought that maybe on a very simplistic level, when it says they, which we didn't understand who they was, is that the rabbis who are writing the commentaries, the prisoner cannot free himself from jail. Maybe that means it takes others to help you. And on the third actually we're talking about that very last phrase, and he bared his arm and light radiated from it. We didn't understand who he was. It's not clear if it was the Rabbi Eliezer who fell ill or it was Rabbi Yohanan. We just didn't know. And very lastly, we wondered, when it said in parentheses Talmud, we didn't know if that was referring to all three of the stories or just the third story.
Okay, so just to answer that one question right now, I can tell you that the three stories which are together come from Brachot, number 5b, which I didn't have the citation on the page. Okay. Anything that you'd like to add?
Well, similarly, I mean, we just on the face of it, the first one we took as someone had to offer help and that raised him. And in the second one, the ill person couldn't help themselves. They need someone else to visit or and reach out to raise them. And then in the third one, we weren't sure whose arm the light was radiating from, whether that was a divine presence that was apart from the person visiting or what was up with that.
Okay. Anything from here that you'd like to add?
We had trouble with the whole issue of sufferings being welcome.
Louder, please.
We had trouble with the whole issue of suffering being welcome to the person. That was hard to understand. And in the last one of the things that was brought up was he bared his arm and light radiated from it. Maybe the person who was visiting was acting. Light is often interpreted as God. Maybe
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And from the last table, anything you would like to add to the discussion?
We weren't sure about this question. It seemed like a strange, almost provocative question. We thought maybe it was a way of kind of checking on the mood of the sick person and eliciting some kind of response from them. And on the bare arm bearing light, I thought maybe it was Rabbi Yochanan bearing his arm that he had used in the previous stories to raise up the sick person. So that made it kind of especially powerful arm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess the few things that I would like to highlight are related to these stories from Brachot is first that I feel that they really speak to the power of relationship in healing, that that's really at the basis of these stories. Even in those instances where someone has formally been strengthened by a solid system of faith and beliefs. So there, in indicating that sufferings are not welcome, there is a hint both of admitting weakness in one's ability to tolerate these, as well as one's capacity to hold on to prior sources of strength. So initially, there's kind of this idea, the rabbi imagining that the rabbi who is ill, because of a strong sense of belief and faith and capacity, that even in the time of illness, that that's going to be available to a person. And I think we know that oftentimes that becomes greatly diminished. Rabbi Yochanan is given the benefit of the doubt that he has the capacity to draw on his own sense of competency and that he could then affect change on his own. But we see from the story the suggestion that this may not be possible. And oftentimes when people have felt resilient or strong in the past, they are not unable to bring these capacities forward for themselves. In terms of sufferings being welcome or not, what you suggested, certainly I have met many people who have had a bad diagnosis. Something has happened to them quite unexpectedly. And I will tell you the words they've used, this is a gift from God. Now that may sound highly surprising and highly unusual to imagine that someone whose life has perhaps turned on a dime and suddenly finds themselves in the throes of a very difficult illness could consider it a gift from God. So one way that a patient described this to me was feeling like this gives God an opportunity to bring healing to me. I'm not sure how many of us would be able to have that kind of perspective. I certainly have many other patients who compare their predicaments to those of Job, which is kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. A story in which someone suffers greatly and with great difficulty comes to try to make some understanding and meaning out of that suffering. But I would say, unfortunately, in our culture, there is a bit of a trope sometimes of this idea that you should be able to find meaning, that you should be able to find the good, that you should be able to find the positive. And for some people, that's something that will be helpful to them, but it's certainly not a message that's helpful to everybody. And certainly what's most important is to truly understand what the illness means within the person's meaning-making system, which I'll talk about in just a minute. The other thing that we see in these stories is the power of touch. And what I would say is with a patient's permission, as well as a family member's permission, this can be a very important piece of a visit, which I'll now illustrate. Mr. L is in the final stages of his renal disease, with a life expectancy remaining of just a few days. I've gotten to know him through many hospitalizations. He considers himself to be a spiritual person, and he is a lifelong learner when it comes to Jewish texts. As he has become increasingly diminished in his abilities, he's been comforted by the reading of certain psalms and prayers from the Shabbat liturgy. On what would be the day before his death, he is lying in the intensive care unit, now unable to communicate verbally or physically. His eyes are closed, and he is covered up to his neck in blankets, and he appears to be comfortable. His spouse, after spending quite a long time talking with me, becomes tearful. She expresses a wish to comfort her husband, but quietly admits that with him in this state, which feels so unfamiliar to her, she is afraid to approach him or even to touch him. I offer her the possibility of assisting her. What I say to her is, I can hold your hand, and then together we can put our hands on his shoulder. Miss L agrees to this suggestion. She takes my hand and gently guides it toward his shoulder. Our hands rest there for a bit, and after a few moments, she lets go of my hand and she begins to stroke her husband's hair. So this was just one story from the Talmud that we looked at, but I would like to mention that there are many other teachings that also address the issue of Bikur Cholim. And I'll just name a few of these. That one who performs Bikur Cholim is spared from the judgment of Gehinnom. That visiting a sick person takes away 1/60th of that person's suffering. And that not to visit the sick is equivalent to the shedding of blood. Okay. So if you'll turn in your packet now to the next page, I have included some excerpts from Rambam's Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Avel, which is the section on laws of mourning, as well as from Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot Bikor Cholim, the laws of Bikor Cholim. If you turn to the part where it says Appendix B, and afterwards you'll have a chance to look at these on your own, and you'll notice that there are many very explicit directives about how to behave during a visit. Everything from what to wear, where to position oneself, what time of day to visit, and what kinds of illnesses are ones in which one should reconsider making a visit. But what I would like us to look at is numbers 4, 5, and 6, which all deal with the issue of prayer. So if someone could read number 4 aloud, please.
People should not visit the sick person during the first 3 hours of the day. If he appears or her healthiest then. Consequently, visitors will not be sufficiently concerned about him and will not pray on his behalf as fervently as they should. Likewise, they should not visit in the last 3 hours of the day, since the sick person then appears to be more dire straits than he actually is. Under those circumstances, visitors will despair of the recovery and fast pray for him as they should.
Okay. Now, if someone could read number 5, please.
Regarding praying for God's mercy on the sick person's behalf, if one is praying in front of him, one can pray in any language with which one feels comfortable. However, if one is praying for the sick person but not in his presence, one should pray only in the holy tongue.
Okay, and now the last one. Number 6.
When praying for the sick person, one should beseech God to have mercy upon him, together with all the other holy men of Israel. However, on Shabbat, one should say, should I read 7?
No, that's fine. Okay. So you'll notice in these 3 sections that these all directly or implicitly state that prayer should be a component of a Bikur Cholim visit. Okay. Now I'd like a volunteer to look at the next page, and there's a poem called Praying by Mary Oliver. And if someone would read that for us. Thank you.
Doesn't have to be the blue iris, could be weeds in a vacant lot, or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and the silence in which another voice may speak.
Okay, so we can see there's a contrast in the 3 passages that we read from the Shulchan Aruch, talking about prayer, and the poem that we just read. Do we have anyone who'd like to comment on what stands out to you about the poem?
That it doesn't have to be elaborate, that it should just be, it's not a contest, and sometimes silence is all right, but it allows, you know, another voice, perhaps God, to speak.
Mm-hmm. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
Paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a prayer, like a true prayer or a Shulchan Aruch. It could be your own.
Mm-hmm. Did everyone hear what was said there? Okay. So, go ahead.
It also feels reminiscent to number 5 of Shulchan Aruch, which felt to me as if you're supposed to say prayer whatever way it makes you and makes the person who's sick comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because it's you're in the presence of them and you don't want any uncomfortability.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of this in terms of it's not what you're doing, it's why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, those are all exactly what I was hoping to get across. And I'll just give you an illustration that I think speaks to this idea of how expansive the meaning of prayer really can be. So a 94-year-old female patient who is known to me has spent the weekend in the intensive care unit, and she has once again pulled through a frightening episode. Her daughter, in an effort to comfort her mother when she was intubated, that means when she has a breathing tube in, and not communicative and not responsive, not visually responsive in any way, found herself, this is the daughter, singing all the Broadway show tunes she could remember, something which her mother loved. In hesitantly reporting this to me, I commented on this image and reflected to the daughter that she had brought a moment of spiritual meaning to what was a very frightening scenario. When the daughter questioned the, quote, Jewish nature of this intervention, saying to me, well, what would Cantor R. say about this? I reminded her of discussions we'd had in the past when she had wondered about her mother's ongoing drive and fight to live, during which time I had helped her to think about what it means to bring someone's own personal meaning-making system into a situation. I then suggested, in part based on the previous visits I'd had with the patient and my understanding of her connection to her Judaism, is that the daughter might think of these songs, music that felt sacred to her mother, as part of this patient's Torah. On your next sheet, I've written down some suggestions and things to think about in terms of an actual visit. I don't think we'll read these aloud. You can read these on your own. But if I had to stress just a couple of things, it would be to go in with a sense of curiosity and no agenda. What I like to say sometimes to people is, you don't know till you know. For instance, someone may say to me, oh, well, that's an Orthodox patient. And I don't know what that means till I meet the person and understand what this means for this particular person. And it's the same, really, for many characteristics and aspects of someone who is ill. You may meet someone who has a diagnosis that is the same diagnosis as a family member of yours may have had. Nonetheless, I want to stress, but you don't know what this diagnosis means for this person. So again, a sense of curiosity and no agenda. It's important to take cues from the person that you're with, particularly in terms of how long to stay. And again, going back to what we talked about earlier, this idea, to the best of your ability, to be attentive, to be present, and to really listen with your heart. So in closing, I'd like to acknowledge that sitting in the presence of someone who may be experiencing a moment of spiritual, emotional, or physical crisis is not easy. Listening to questions such as, does my life have meaning? Am I still lovable in this diminished state? Does my family really understand how alone I feel? Or even, does God want me to suffer in this way? All of these questions stir up our own past experiences, our imaginings, and even our worst nightmares. The rabbi's offering of insight and direction doesn't make the task of visiting an easy one. But from a place of our tradition, we may be able to approach a visit with an increased measure of confidence, knowing that we are partnering with the divine in offering this sacred mitzvah of relationship. Thank you. So I see we have a few minutes. If anyone would like to ask any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
What about visiting someone who's seems unconscious in speaking to them.
Okay, so the question was, what about visiting someone who is or seems unconscious and the idea of speaking with them? So I encounter this very often in the hospital setting, and family members ask me about this. And one thing that I acknowledge immediately is that it can feel very awkward to speak with someone who you know will not speak back to you and who will not visually demonstrate that they know you're there or that they're recognizing that you're there. But my belief that particularly when it's someone who is known to the patient, a family member, that communication auditorily and in terms of touch, that those communications get through. And I think the person is still here, the person is still alive, the person is still very much with you, and if you can find a way to be comfortable with this, I encourage you to speak. It may be sharing reminiscences or memories. It may be sharing a feeling that somehow you've never felt comfortable to express in the past. It may be expressing gratitude for what the person has meant to you. But I think that it can be meaningful both for you as the one offering this, but I do believe it makes a difference to the person in the bed. Yes?
Well, one thing you sort of dancing around here is the fact of what is the depth of the patient's spirituality. Does that person actually believe in God?
Mm-hmm.
Do they believe in anything supernatural? I know I was in the hospital once, I was very sick, and a rabbi came, a chaplain came to visit. And that's the first thing she asked, really, was, what is the level of my belief in the supernatural? Once we got that out of the way, then she aimed the conversation away. And I think that's very important because I belong to a chavurah of maybe 100 people, and if I went to visit anybody, I don't know specifically how they feel. I see them at services, I see them praying,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know what they're really doing. I pray, and it means something to me, and other people mean something different. And I think you really have to aim your conversation to the individual in terms of what they want. And that's probably pretty tricky to figure out until you go through that every time.
Mm-hmm. Right, so this talk is really geared towards thinking about how all of you might be able to make visits and be comfortable in that. Certainly as a professional chaplain, a key piece of my visit with a person is doing what would be called a spiritual assessment, exactly what you're speaking to, which is understanding to the best of my ability what the role of spirituality may be in their life, how they express that spirituality, what brings meaning to their life, and certainly with Jewish patients and families, what role does Judaism play? Some people say to me, I'm not religious, but I know I'm Jewish. So I get that many times. Many people say to me, I'm culturally Jewish, and they tell me what that means. I have several patients from the former Soviet Union who talk about how that was unavailable to them, but they have very specific ways in which they imagine a chaplain or a rabbi needs to be available to them at key moments in their life. So that's an excellent point, and that's really where we have to begin, to make sure that what you're bringing to a person really addresses their own meaning-making system and their own spirituality. And certainly with Jewish patients, as well as patients who may be from another faith tradition or no tradition, who might want me to offer a blessing or a prayer, I always ask if the word God is something that they want me to include in the prayer. Yes?
How do you handle a negative response? How are your spirits lousy? Where do you go from there?
I might ask the person to tell me more. You know, when someone answers in that way, That's where they are right in that moment. So I may want to try to understand, gee, can you tell me what that's about? To understand maybe how long that's been going on, what's making them feel lousy. They could be lousy because of the illness that has brought them to the hospital, or they could feel lousy because no family members are coming to visit them. So it's really trying to understand what that statement would mean for them, but also not to feel fearful when you hear something negative. To understand that's where the person is, and just go in, as I said, with a sense of curiosity. Oh, can you help me understand that? Or, gee, I'm wondering what's causing you to feel lousy today. But also not to feel like your role is to figure out a way how to cheer them up. It may be that in that moment, in that day, cheering up is not the answer, but being listened to and coming with a sense of compassion is what the person needs. Maybe one more question? Okay, well, I'd like to thank everybody for coming.
Nancy, for joining us today. I think that point about being fearful of making visits is a stumbling block for a lot of people. So I want to thank you for both the textual support for why we need to do this, even when we don't necessarily feel at peace, but also the guidelines that can really help us feel like we have the tools. We know what to do when we go in. So that's a real gift that you gave to us today. Thank you for that. A reminder that our next session will be April 17th with Dr. Michael Broden, who is a professor of Jewish studies, bioethics, and psychiatry at BU. Some of his research focuses on medicine and the Holocaust. I don't know if that's his topic. His title is Old Texts and Contemporary Dilemmas, or Ancient Texts and Contemporary Dilemmas, Old Wine in New Bottles. I think that was probably because in September he wanted to buy himself a lot of flexibility so he could talk about, decide what to talk about on April 16th and not in advance of April 7th, not that far in advance. Meanwhile, his research, though, is really very powerful, and I have heard terrific things about him as a teacher, so I hope you'll join us for that. And I'll just reiterate what Jillian said about Read on Tuesday night at the Back Bay Event Center with Dara Horn. If you don't have a chance to read the book before then, we'll have some books available for sale. And once you hear her talk about the book, I'm sure it'll be something you'll want to embrace more of on your own. The topic of the book is about a couple who cannot die. They go through historical tragedy after historical tragedy after historical tragedy and come back to life after each one. And the dilemmas of what does it mean if you actually could live forever. So I think in many ways, tying in here to what does somebody need, and what if they, to what extent can we be responsive to what they need and just not some idealized vision of what we think is what they want. So thank you all, and we'll see you in a month.
Welcome. Yeah, for a lot of years, that we did a day of, yeah, a day of.